Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Basra, Daf Tzadik Beis. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Beis, Amud Aleph. Begin Beis where Hashem is Barach, the new perek. Says the Mishnah, Hamarcha Peres L'Chaveroi. If somebody sells, Peroi sells fruit to somebody else, V'Zoram, and the buyer plants those fruits in order for seeds to grow new fruit, V'Loi Tzamchu, and they did not grow, no new produce grows out of those seeds, Afilo Zerapishtin, even if it's flax seed, which is normally bought with the purpose of planting, Enechai Bechriyosan, the seller is not responsible. For the seller could successfully say that he assumed that he was selling this for the purpose of eating and not planting, and therefore the fact that it didn't take root is not his responsibility. And as the Mefarshim point out, the Mishnah is being specific in using the words for like tzamchu to teach us that not only is he not responsible to reimburse the buyer, but it's even more than that. The buyer, even if he has seeds left, and says to the seller, well, at least the seeds that I have left, take back. The seller could say, I refuse to take back any seeds. However, qualifies the Mishnah this rule. And again, as the Rishonim point out, in this case, what we're going to be learning now from Shimon Gamliel, it's not that Rav Shimon Gamliel is arguing with the Tanakhama. There's no machlokes in our Mishnah. Says the Gemara of Shimon Gamliel, says, Zeroyne Ginash Ene Necholim, if, however, what was purchased are garden seeds, which are not edible, and therefore are bought only for planting, and then it turns out that these seeds don't grow, then halach is Chai Bechriyuson, the seller will be held responsible. And as Rishonim point out, not only will the seller be responsible, but to reimburse the buyer for buying such seeds, but even if the buyer is unable to give back seeds, he already planted those seeds in the ground, and those seeds can't be taken out of the ground, or it's certainly very difficult to take those seeds out of the ground, still the halacha will remain that the seller is responsible. Not only say the Rishonim to the seller will be responsible to that degree, but the Rishonim take this even a step further. The seller perhaps should be able to argue to the buyer that he should be able to deduct the value of these seeds, that the seeds at least could be used as fuel. They maybe aren't good seeds to be used for planting, but they can be used as fuel, and therefore the buyer should at least have to take that amount off the sale. Teaches us the Mishnah that the seller is totally responsible and there's no deduction from the buyer. But now the Rishonim debate a situation where there could be a dispute between the buyer and the seller as why these seeds didn't take root, why they didn't grow. The buyer says because they were defective seeds. The seller, however, says the reason that they didn't take hold is because you didn't plant them properly, it was a bad year, the climate wasn't right. What would be the halacha? So the Rishonim certainly say that if it's a year where in all the fields the seeds aren't taking root properly, certainly the seller would not be held responsible. The Ramban, the Rashbam say, if indeed what's required is to do some sort of an inspection, they should bring an expert to determine why didn't these seeds grow. However, what would be the halacha if that inspection can't be done? And now we're not sure what is the reason these seeds didn't grow. It's interesting, Tosfos says two different approaches. First, Tosfos seems to take the approach that it would not be the buyer, it would not, it's still the seller's responsibility, and the buyer could claim to get reimbursed for the seeds. But then Tosfos seems to say, only in a case where the buyer could successfully prove that it was the inferior quality of the seeds that caused that they shouldn't grow properly, does the buyer have a right to make that claim. If the buyer can't prove it, then the buyer will not be able to get reimbursed. Says the Gemara, Itmar, we learned, Hamaycha shar l'chaveroi, if somebody sells an ox to someone else, v'nimtsanachin, and it turns out that this animal is an animal that does damage. And as the Rishonim point out, the seller did not inform the buyer that this animal is a nachon. If the seller informed the buyer that the animal is a nachon, then obviously the buyer can't have any complaint. There's an interesting Or Sameach. The Or Sameach says that if the seller told the buyer that the animal is a nachon, but let's say the animal is a muad, and all he indicated was that the animal is a tam, so it's not as serious as a muad, what would be the halacha? And Dar Sameach, it's a very bechidish from Dar Sameach, but Dar Sameach says, as long as the seller tells the buyer that the animal is a nachon, even though he didn't tell him to what extent of a problem there exists here, it would already not, then the buyer has no claim. And in fact, I saw a tshuva from Yitzchak Zilberstein based on this Or Sameach. He says, Rechmano Litzlon, if there's a chassan and a kala, and the chassan or the kala are informed that their that the chassan has some sort of a disease or some sort of a problem, or vice versa, but they aren't informed to what extent, says Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, based on this Or Sameach, as long as they were informed that of this problem, even though they weren't informed of the full extent of the problem, they have no claim of a mekachtos. Because here Or Sameach says the fact that they were just notified, the issue is that the seller did not tell the buyer that the animal is a nachon. Had the seller told the buyer that the animal is a nachon, the buyer would have no complaint. So now, the seller in our Gemara did not tell the buyer that the animal is a nachon. Now, if the buyer bought the animal just to eat the meat, it doesn't really make a difference because he's going to slaughter the animal and eat it. The issue is if the animal was bought for plowing, and obviously such an animal one can't hold on to in his home because the animal could cause a lot of damage. So here we have the buyer going back to the seller and telling the seller that this should be a mekach tos because the animal turned out to be a nachon. And Rav says, indeed, he has a right to make such a claim. Hareza mekach tos. He has a right to say it's a mekach tos. Shmuel Amar, Yochaloi Meloi, the seller could say to the buyer, L'shchita mecharti loch, I sold you this animal for eating. The fact that it's a nachon is not relevant and you have no claim. And what is the basis of Shmuel Psak, as will be the sugya Beis Hashem Yisbarach of today? Our sugya that we're going to learn is the sugya of Ein Holchem Mamon Acharoyf. And Shmuel says that even if most people buy animals for plowing, it wouldn't change the psak of the Gemara. Ask the Rashbam. We've learned that Mamon HaMutar B'Sofek, that if sometimes there's a debate about the status of Mamon, so Shumchis Paskins, that Mamon HaMutar B'Sofek, if there's a Machlaikis, Cholkim, we should divide the money. So ask the Rashbam, according to Shumchis' opinion, why here too don't we say that Mamon HaMutar B'Sofek, Cholkim, should be divided? So Tosfos wants to suggest that the Chachamim disagree with Sumchus, and the Chachamim hold that we don't agree to this din, a mamar amutl b'safik chalkim, and that's why that's not an option here. However, the Rashbam says that even according to Sumchus, that says the mamar amutl b'safik chalkim, here Sumchus' rule is not applicable. For he explains, when does Sumchus say mamar amutl b'safik chalkim? He says it's in such a situation, the famous case of Sumchus, there was a barter, where I gave you my donkey, and you exchanged it with your cow, and that is a baby born to this cow, and the question is, when was that baby born? When it was still by the seller or by the buyer? That's when Sumchus says Yachloiku. Why? Because there's a suffix in the Metzius, there's a suffix in the facts of the case. When was the animal sold? And that's why Sumchus says Yachloiku. Here, says the Gemara, there's no question into the facts of the case. The question is it a mekachtos or not? When it's not a sofik in Metzius, even Sumchus agrees that we don't say Yachloiku. Ask the Gemara, why, when we have this dispute between the buyer and the seller, don't we do the following? Filechsi, I gavra de zavala nechsechsa, if he's an individual that normally buys for animals for slaughter, so we say lenechsechsa. It's obvious that he bought this animal for slaughtering. I l'radja, and if he's a person that normally buys animals for plowing, we should say l'radja, that he certainly bought this animal also for plowing, and that's why there was a mekachtos. Says the Ritva, why is the Gemara saying that we should take this approach? Why don't we just take the approach that we're working with? That the Gemara's approach is that we should that Rav says we follow Rav, and Rav says, and if this and we should follow if Rav people buy animals for plowing or for eating, says the Ritva, a very important concept. Then when do we follow Rav? We follow Rav when we have no other way of adjudicating the situation. So that's what the Torah taught us, the din of Rav. But certainly, where we don't have to rely on Rav to resolve a dispute, we don't rely on Rav. And that's what the Gemara says. Let's look at who this individual is. The Rashbam says that the way to understand the Gemara is that we're referring to a situation where the buyer and the seller know each other. And therefore, the buyer can say to the seller, you know what purpose I bought this animal for. The Rosh doesn't take the same approach as the Rashbam. The Rosh says that we should rely on Umdana. We should see the situation and we should determine what is the probable situation under which this animal was bought. Says the Gemara, Begavra, the Zavim Lahachi Lahachi. The buyer is an individual who buys animals both for eating and for plowing, and therefore that's not the way to tell what the animal was bought for. Ask the Gemara, v'lechsi damiheichaninu. So why don't we look at the purchase price? As the Rashbam explains, the price of animals for plowing is higher than the price of animals for eating, for slaughter. And why can't we use the price as an indication what purpose the animal was bought for? Ask the Rashbam. We recently learned the Gemara on Daf Ayin Zayin. The Gemara on Daf Ayin Zayin said that the Gemara discussed a situation where somebody bought an animal, bought a tzemed. And as we learned, the tzemed means the apparatus with which the animal is connected to the wagon. And there's a question, what is included in the tzemed? Is it just that apparatus, or is it the animal itself? So the Gemara asked, why don't we use the purchase price as an indication what was and what wasn't included? So the Gemara says that we don't rely on purchase price to make that determination. So ask the Rashbam, how does our Gemara say that we should rely on the purchase price to determine what was or wasn't? The Gemara earlier in Amasakta says we don't rely on purchase price. Answers the Rashbam that where does the Gemara say that we don't rely on the price to tell us what was and wasn't included? In a case like the Gemara in Daf Ayin Zayin, where the item might have never been sold in the first place. We don't know what is included in the sale of a tzemed. When we don't know what's included in the sale of a tzemed, to rely on a price to teach us what the tzemed includes, we don't. Here for sure we know that there was a sale. There's no dispute that the buyer bought this animal. The only dispute is, was there a mekach tos, because he bought it for plowing, not for slaughter. There we can rely on price. Tosfos says a different teretz. Tosfos says, in our Gemara there are two different factors pulling in different directions. Because it's a very important concept the Rishonim set forth. The entire discussion in our Gemara, if the buyer has a right to claim mekach tos and get his money back, is only in a situation where he has already paid. But if the buyer hasn't paid, certainly the buyer doesn't have to pay, because we could take the approach of hamotzi mechaveroi olav haraya. Just here the buyer paid. And we have here two conflicting concepts. On one hand, the seller is holding on to the money, and that makes him a muchzik. On the other hand, the buyer says that roiv, since most people buy animals for plowing, favors his side of the debate. In this specific situation, we have a roiv and a muchzik going in different directions. Here is where the Gemara suggests that price should help us determine what to do. But in other situations, price is not something that we rely on to make a psak halacha. Answers the Gemara. Leitzricha, our Gemara is referring to a situation, the Yarka Basra, that the price of meat went out, the Kam Demei Regia. There's really no difference between the price of an animal for plowing and the price of an animal for slaughtering. Ask the Gemara, if there's no difference in price, Hihachi, Lamay Nafkamina, what are they arguing over? There's no financial gain or loss here. Answers Gemara, Nafkamina L'tircha. Nafkamina is only, who should have the bother here? That means the buyer says to the seller, I didn't buy this animal for slaughter, I bought this animal for plowing, and it's clearly not qualified to plow. You take back the animal, and I'll get myself another animal. And the seller says, no, if this animal isn't what you're looking for, you should have the tircha of selling this animal and buying yourself an animal that you do want. Says the Gemara, let's try to understand. Hey Chidami, what exactly is the situation here? If the seller doesn't have the funds available to give back to the buyer, lack of tura bezuze, and then certainly the buyer should hold on to the animal instead of the money that he's asking back. The Amri Inchi, because there's an old saying, Memari Rishav says, somebody who owes you money, pari ephra, collect even bran as payment. Which means, don't wait to collect cash or something that you want to get, because you may never get it. So whatever you could get to collect your debt, that's what you should take. So therefore, in our Gemara, if the seller has no other funds, certainly the buyer should hold on to the animal, and there's no room for discussion. Answers the Gemara, L'tzricha, our Gemara is referring to a situation, Dikalash Talumnei, where the seller does have cash available, and since the seller has cash available, now we have a dispute between the buyer and the seller, where the buyer wants the money back, and the seller says, I don't want to give you back money. But we have here a very interesting machlokes rishonim. What does the Gemara mean when it says that the seller has money? Pasha pshat, and this is the pshat that most rishonim follow, that the seller has cash available. And that's why the buyer is saying to the seller, give me cash, and if you don't have cash, what he called, give me cash and take back your animal. But Rabbeinu Chananu has a very interesting, strict interpretation. Rabbeinu Chananel says, it doesn't mean that the seller has cash. The seller has cash that the buyer gave him. The actual money that the buyer gave the seller, that money the seller still has. But were it to be a situation where the seller doesn't have that money, even though he has other cash, that won't be considered the ikel ishtalu mimineh. Very bechidish. Based on this Gemara, say the Rishonim, and this is the halacha, that as far as halva, it's the same. That let's say I lent someone money, and now I want to get paid back. If the loiva has cash, and here it means any cash that he has, I have a right to claim that I want to get repaid in cash, and the loiva can't say, well, I'll give you metaltlin. Only if he doesn't have metaltlin, only if he doesn't have cash, then do I have to accept metaltlin. And the explanation that the Rishonim give is because we don't want to be noil delis b'fnei lovin. We don't want to create a situation where people won't want to lend each other money by saying we don't have what you call, you're going to have to take metaltlin instead of cash. But then the Rishonim go on to discuss what's the halacha regarding salary. That means if I work and now it comes to collect my salary and my employer says I don't have cash, I have metaltlin. Must an employee accept metaltlin or not? The Rishonim that say it's the same as the case that we just discussed by Halva, that if the employer doesn't have cash available, he could pay metaltlin. But there are Rishonim that say, Rabbeinu Tam's opinion, that when it comes to salary, if the employer doesn't have cash, he only has metaltlin, it's his responsibility to go sell those metaltlin, raise cash, and pay salary only in cash. And the explanation given is because the Torah has special rules when it comes to paying salary. The Torah says, Lo solon pulas schas socher. So the Torah is very specific when it comes to, very specific and very strict actually, when it comes to the payment of salary. And that's why the halacha is that salary should always be paid strictly in cash. There's a very interesting Mordechai, that the Mordechai says that he had a dream with Rabbeinu Meir. Apparently Rabbeinu Meir was a Rishon. Rabbeinu Meir came to him in a dream and told him an interesting psak. If the employer has food that and he has no cash, the employee has to accept food as payment. But he doesn't have to accept any other metaltlin as payment. And I didn't really see anybody explain the reason why food is treated different than another metaltlin. So I was thinking, perhaps pshat in that dream of Rabbeinu Meir speaking to Mordechai is as follows. If an employer owes employee money, salary, he has a table, says, here, take the table. The employee doesn't need the table. So now that the employee should have the obligation to have to go sell that table and buy and to raise cash. So as we said earlier, the Torah is very concerned about employees and let the employer sell the table. But if the employer has food, an employee needs to buy food. When somebody goes to work, what's he going to work for? He's going to have money to buy food. And therefore, the halacha is that he has a right to pay him in food if he doesn't have cash. So now we've identified what is the case of the machlokes of Rav and Shmuel, where there's no financial issue, it's only a question of tircha. Rav says that it's considered a mekach tos because Basar Rav is leaning. We follow Rav. And most people buy animals for plowing, and therefore if this animal turned out to be a nachon, the buyer has a valid claim. Shmuel Amar, Lach Shmuel on the other hand says, Ki Ezlina Basaruba, where do we follow Roiv? Bisura, strictly when it comes to Isser, questions of Isser, the classical case, is where there are 9 stores in a town selling kosher meat, and 1 store is selling non-kosher meat, and a piece of meat is found on the street, so called the parish, meruba parish, and we assume that the meat is kosher. But memain aloi, not when it comes to mammon. So machloikis harishainim how to understand Shmuel's concept of Ein Hochel Mamon Acharoyv. Does Shmuel mean to say that even though the Torah taught us the halacha of Roiv, the Torah did not mean in a situation of Mamon? In a situation of Mamon, there is no din of Roiv. That's one way of understanding Shmuel. Or another way that some Rishonim suggest is that Shmuel agrees that the Torah gives a lot of credence to Roiv. Acharabim Lahatois. The Torah is very into the concept of Roiv. However, even though the Torah strongly follows the concept of Roiv, here, the Rabbanon, and the Rabbanon have that right, because as we've learned so many times, Hefker Bezdin Hefker, the Rabbanon have a right to say that we should not follow Roiv. And some Achroinim want to bring a Raya, the Shalom Eishiv, to this way of understanding the Gemara. Because they say, if the way to understand Shmuel is that as far as Dinei Mamonis are concerned, we do not at all follow the concept of Roiv, then why, when we have a Din Torah regarding Dinei Mamonis, is the Halacha, we follow Roiv? We have the Beis Din, and if there's 3 members or 23 members, whatever amount of members there are in the court, we follow them in paskening. We follow the Roiv. If Pshat is that the din of Roiv wasn't set as far as Hilchas Mamon is concerned, so how could that Beis Din paskin based on Roiv? So it must be that Roiv is applicable even by Din of Mamonis, and that's why in the Beis Din situation, the Rabbanim did not say that we shouldn't follow Roiv. Specifically in this situation, did the Rabbanim say we shouldn't follow Roiv? Other Achroinim say that this Raya is not really compelling, because they say that a Beis Din is not to be understood as a Roiv. When we have a Din Torah and there's a majority versus a minority, it's not that there's a Roiv. It's as if there's a new entity. There's an entity called Beis Din. And Beis Din paskin whatever they paskin. There, certainly, it's not a question of Roiv. It could be that the Torah never applied the concept of Roiv as far as Dinei Mamonis are concerned. The Rashbam, however, makes an interesting point. He says that when Al Gemara says that Shmuel says that we don't follow Roiv, is only in a case of Al Gemara. Because in Al Gemara, the situation is that the seller claiming that he thought that the buyer is buying the animal for slaughter is a fair claim, because he says that the buyer should have specified what his purpose in buying this animal was. The fact that the buyer failed to make that specification helps the seller, and that's why Shmuel says here, Ein Hochel Mamon Acharoyv. And the Beis Yitzchak uses this Rashbam to paskin an interesting shaila. He says that in Vienna, in his times, typically a Sroigim was sold from Corfu. One year, the Esrig merchant brought a Sroigim from Corsica, and he didn't inform his buyers. So somebody bought an Esrig, and then he became aware. And he said, so the buyer came to the seller and said, I didn't want a Corsican Esrig. And it seems that we should apply the concept of Ein Hochma Mamon Acharoyv, and it should be the buyer's burden to prove that he didn't want such an Esrig, because it's a kosher Esrig. However, the Beis Yitzchak, based on the Rashbam that we just quoted, says in this case, even Shmuel would agree that the seller has to refund the money. Because in this case, where this Meicher Esroigim was selling Korfin Esroigim all the years, he had no reason to believe that the Esroigim this year that were being sold were any different than the Esroigim that were sold in previous years. And therefore, the buyer, there is no claim that the seller could have to the buyer, why didn't you notify me that that's what you were looking for, Korfin Esrig, and he would have to refund his money. There's a very interesting vart from the Cheskuni, based on our Gemara. The Torah says that when a person buys an Eved Ivri, so the Torah uses the words V'yotza Ishtoi Imoy, and Rashi says Mikan She'odom Chai B'mezoinis Ishtoi Banov, that while somebody is an Eved Ivri by his owner, the owner has to continue to support the Eved Ivri's wife and children. And the question that the Chizkuni asks is, why does the owner have to support those sons? Maybe he could claim, how do I know that those are really your children? Maybe your wife had an immoral relationship and those aren't really your children. Are you going to say we should follow Roif, and therefore we have a concept of Roif Bilis Achabal, and therefore we could assume that someone's wife's children are indeed his children? Here we're talking about an issue of Mammon. We're talking about the Odin supporting those children. And we just finished saying that according to Shmuel, the Aloch is Ein Holchin B'Mammon Acharoif. So why should he have to support them? Says the Chizkuni. What does the Pasuk of Yotze Ishto Imei mean? The Pasuk says that he can if he has a wife, if David Ivri has a wife, the Odin could give him a Shivcha Kananis, if he has a wife and children already. So the same question is, why is he allowed to marry Shivcha Kananis? Maybe he doesn't have children. But what are you saying? You're relying on the Roif. And that's why you're saying that the children are his. And since the children are his, the Odin could say, you have a wife and children, and that's why I could give you a Shivcha Kananis. So the Torah says to the Odin, if you're relying on the Roiv, and based on that Roiv, you're telling your Eved Ivri to marry Shivcha Kananis, rely on the same Roiv that your children are those children are his children, and you have to support them. Says the Gemara. Now the Gemara is going to bring a number of brises, mishnayis, that perhaps are questions on either the opinion of Rav and Shmuel. Semen esh isha ve'eved shor shvarm upeiris. Meisvei. Mishnah says, Hishishinus Amlo in his Garsha. There's a woman who's divorced or became an almana. And we know, as we learned in Masechta Ksubos, when a marriage terminates by death or divorce, the woman is entitled to Ksuba. And now, she doesn't have her Ksuba. And she claims, Psula Nasasi, I got married as a Psula. And therefore I'm entitled to a ksuba of 200 zuz. Vuimer. And the husband says, loy, or his yarshim say, loy ki ela almana nasuticha. When I married you, you were almana. And you're not entitled only to a ksuba of meya. So as Tosfos, as I just explained, obviously Al Gemara is referring to a situation that she doesn't have a ksuba. Because if she had a ksuba, she should just take out the ksuba. So why can't the husband be believed with a migui that he could have said that he already paid the ksuba? So shouldn't he be believed? So Tosfos answers that Al Gemara is following the opinion of Rav, that a woman doesn't have to present the ksuba to be entitled to the ksuba. Just a get is enough to be entitled, and he wouldn't therefore be believed with a ksuba. With a migui. Another teretz that Tosfos says in Masechta Ksubos is that he can't just have a migui. He has to present a receipt that he indeed paid the ksuba, and if he's unable to present that receipt, she has a valid claim. So says the Gemara, im yesh edim she ought to be in numa. If there are edim that the woman went out with a veil, which is the way a psula went to the chasna. It's interesting, the Rashi says in Masechta Ksubos that the reason a woman wore a hinuma is that the wedding used to take a very long time, and she used to sit under the veil and she could nod off and nobody noticing that she's sleeping. V'roisha perua, where her hair was left untied, that's the way a kala who's a psula would go to the wedding. Then the halach is that she's entitled to ksubas masayim. So what do we see here? Tama deke edim. Only specifically because there are edim, will she be able to get her ksuba? Halaka edim of masayim. Halakha Eidim, were she not to have such Eidim, loy, she would not be able to collect the Ksuba of Messiah. Ask the Gemara, Vamai, Lema Halakha Roiv Noshim, why should we follow the Roiv? Roiv Noshim, Psulas Nesois, and most women get married as Psulas. If Rav is correct, we should follow the Roiv. Answers the Gemara, Amar Ravina, Mishum Dikla Meima, Roiv Noshim Psulas Nesis. Yes, there is a Roiv that women, most women get married when they're Psulas. But there isn't a Miut that get married when they're Amonis. Furthermore, the Kol Nesis Psula, Yesh Lekol. When a woman is getting married, when a Psula gets married, everybody is aware of that wedding. The Zul Haiva and Lekol. This woman, given the fact there was no Kol, that's why Isla Ruba, the Roiv, is weakened, and even though normally perhaps we would rely on Raif, here we can't rely on Raif. Ask the Gemara if this is true. Ikala Nisa Psula Yesh Lekol. And we're establishing now that whenever a woman gets married as a Psula, there's a call. So why, ask the Gemara, Kiyika Edom Mayhava? If there were Edom, we're saying that she got married as a psula, she would be entitled to collect the ksuba of Messiah. Why don't we say middeles lakol? Since there is no kol, so isn't that a clear indication that sadi shakri ninu, that these are liars? And as the Rishonim explained the Gemara, even though, as we've learned so many times, the Torah says it, apishnei edim yakum davar. And Edom are a very powerful force in Halacha, doesn't make it absolute. The Rishonim say a very nice concept. We've mentioned this concept previously. Let's say somebody's a dayan in a din Torah, and there are Edom supporting one of the sides. But the dayan sees that this is not, that there's something dishonest happening here. So just because the Edom are supporting one side, he shouldn't paskin like that. Here too, if the Gemara is the same, if every Psula's marriage has a call, shouldn't the fact that there wasn't a call here, even though there were Edom that she was a Psula, shouldn't that not make a difference? Other Mepharshim want to say that there's like an non-sadi. That since the Gemara is assuming now every marriage of Psula has a call, so that's like an Anan Sadi, which is also Edom, and it should be a situation of Trey or Trey, two Edom versus two Edom. Answers the Gemara, Ella. The way to modify what Ravina said is as follows. Rather than a Psula session call, it's not always. Usually when a Psula gets married, there's a call. Vazu Harva Ela Kol. In this situation, since she didn't have a call, Isla Ruba. That's why her Roiv is weakened. Which means, normally, we would indeed rely on the Roiv. Here, however, the Roiv has been weakened. Why has the Roiv been weakened is based on the Roiv that's been weakened because there was no call to this marriage. However, the Rashbam clearly says, the Roiv Noshim Psulas Nisois certainly is stronger than the Roiv Psulas Yeshlan Kol, and therefore, if it would be a situation where she went out with Hinuma Beroisha, or Hinuma Beroisha Perua, even though there is a Roiv Nisois Psulas Yeshlan Kol, and here there is no Kol, still the fact that she had all the trappings of the marriage of a Psula, and Roiv Noshim Psulas Nisois, that would be a reason to give her a ksuba of Messiah. Toshma. So Gemara attempts another Gemara. Here we want to bring a raya from this Braisa to Rav's opinion. It says, Amaycha Eved L'Chaveri. If somebody sells an Eved to somebody else, an Eved Kanani, V'nimtza Ganav HaKavyustas, and the Ganav and the Eved turns out to be a thief or a kidnapper, Higiyoy, the sale is valid, and the buyer has to keep him. List the mezuyim. However, if it turns out that the Eved is an armed robber, or Muchtav L'Malchus, has been sentenced to death by the government, Aymalai, the buyer can say to the seller, Hareshul Chalaf Anecha, the deal is a Mekachtosh. Now, Reisha, in the first case, where a ganef is found, where the evidence is found to be a ganef or kuvyostis, my tama, lam shum de rabbi hechnesnu. Because most avodim are that way, and therefore the seller has no claim to the buyer, because the buyer could say, rive avodim are this, are like this, and you have to accept them that way. Says the Gemara, doesn't mean roiv. Kolach isnu. All avodim are this way. And as Rishonim explained the Gemara's teretz, it doesn't mean, the Gemara doesn't mean to say that all avodim are ganovim or kuvyostis. The Gemara now, say to Rishonim, is introducing a new concept. There are different levels of roiv. There's a regular situation of roiv, which is the subject of the machloikis of Rav and Shmuel, of Holchim and Mamanach and Roiv. And then you have a situation which is such a strong Roiv, I guess we would call it 99%. When you have that type of Roiv, there, since it's such a strong Roiv, even Shmuel will agree that we follow Roiv. And therefore, since Avodim, being Ganovim and Kuvyostis, is such a very, very strong Roiv, it's very, 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 very common. That's why we follow, even Shmuel, under such a circumstance, would follow that type of rife.